This is your Other Brothers Podcast with your hosts, Tom and Elliot. Welcome, friends, to your Other Brothers Podcast, navigating faith, homosexuality, and masculinity together. As always, this is Tom. Here with me is Elliot.
Hey, everybody.
And talking to us through the wonders of the internet. We're going to talk all about the wonders of the internet today. But from Gaithersburg, Maryland, it's our friend Marshall. Hey, Marshall.
Hello, hello.
Welcome. Glad to have you back.
Oh, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Your last episode, I think, was our retreat episode, was it not?
Yes, yes, that's right. Awesome.
It's when we like crammed, how many of us were on that show?
Like 9 or 10 or something.
There's a lot of people around that round table, but it was so much fun. Love that episode. But yeah, we got Marshall here, and with Elliot and me, we're all going to talk about pornography today, so stay tuned.
It's going to be
a great episode. This is an episode we've been wanting to do for a while, and I don't know why it's taken this long, but we're going to finally get to it. Excited to talk about porn with you.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't know why. This is the one topic that is like the simplest and most should be the most obvious.
We did masturbation before we did pornography. Yeah. What was that about?
It's just taken us so long to get to, because I think it's just so common, almost like commonplace, that you just overlook it.
Yeah, it's like it's always going to be there. We'll get to it eventually, you know. But yeah, we're going to talk about that today. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, Elliot. Happy belated Mean Girls Day.
Oh, thank you so much.
It was Mean Girls Day recently, which is which day of the year?
October 3rd.
And could you explain that to the Mean Girl...
Illiterate,
yeah. What does that mean?
Okay, well, there's a line in the movie where the quote-unquote cute boy, Aaron Samuels, asks Lindsay Lohan's character what day of the week it is, and she replies, it's October 3rd. It's pretty much nothing more than that, that there's a specific date mentioned in the movie.
And it's like narrated too, right? Yeah. She was like, on October 3rd, he asked me
what day it was. Yeah.
And then she says, it's October 3rd.
Yeah, so it kind of has become this cult classic film, and that date has now become Mean Girls Day because it's mentioned
indeed
in the movie. So,
Marshall, have you seen this classic film?
No, I've heard many, many quotes from it, but I have not
Marshall,
seen it,
we need
actually
to watch Mean Girls someday.
Everybody tells me that.
Oh, yeah. That's classic viewing.
It is a very well-written film. Thank you, Tina Fey.
Yeah, so witty, so many lines. What's your favorite quote, Elliot, from that?
Oh, my gosh.
If you had to pick one.
I know what mine is. Just one. I'm trying to think of the ones that I use the most, like "Get in, loser, we're going shopping," or
my
"Gosh, Karen."
Yeah, my favorite is "Gosh, Karen, you're so stupid."
Is "Butter a carb?" You know, there's a lot of good lines. Yeah.
Oh man,
I want my pink shirt back.
I wonder what percentage of our audience knows what we're talking about right now. What do you think?
Probably a large percentage.
You think greater than 50? 50%?
I think most. I know.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about Marshall for a second. Marshall, okay. How are you doing?
Doing well overall. Well, just to introduce people who don't know me as well, I live in a normal-sized house with a more-than-normal-sized crowd.
abnormal people. Yeah.
Yes, there are, 8 guys, including me, in the house. And it's a really good experience for me, but it just takes a lot out of me. And hopefully because I put so much into it, I do receive a lot from it. That's been really good, really helpful for me. Just to say a little bit about myself. Lately, there has been a little more sadness in my life because my father is elderly and having some health problems. And I've been needing to deal with that, you know, fly to Florida where he lives and deal with that. But other than that, things are going well for me.
All right. Thanks for that update. I did have a question that about you because you talked to Ryan, one of our yobbers who appeared on the show a couple episodes ago. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I probably had an hour and a half conversation with him on the phone. Yes.
So tell us what you talked about, because Ryan was on our show a couple episodes ago if you missed it, and he was talking about we were, well, all of us were talking about support groups, and specifically with him, he leads a group that he doesn't call a support group, but he leads a group at his church, and it's for, how does he describe it? For
non-straight sexuality.
Yeah, which I had never heard that descriptor before, which is interesting. Well, that's an interesting one. So non-straight sexuality, and so both for men and for women. And so y'all talked about what? About potentially you leading a group or starting a group? Or what's, yes, like, I want to hear your side of that.
What happened was I'm in a church that's about 1,000 people. It's large enough where certainly there are people who deal with same-sex attraction. Well, I know there are. I know some of them.
At least one or two.
And it's a group like that would probably work in our church because there are some people that do need some support, I'm sure. And we talked about how he approached the pastors. And, you know, he just talked about, you know, some of the way that, not just how he started it, but some of the things they talk about, just how he kept the group going, and, you know, a lot of details like that that would be helpful to me if I would want to get a group like that together, you know, here in my church. I've attempted something before, and it only lasted 2 meetings, but I think there was some good that came out of it. Well, there were definitely some long-term friendships that came out of it. And so I was discussing all that with him, and he had some suggestions for making it last longer than 2 meetings. So it was good.
Cool. Well, I definitely want to hear updates on that. We'll have to have you on in the future if something pans out with all that.
Yeah. Well, I do know some people that I can be talking to, and I've kind of started the process, but not in a fast way. And he said, you don't have to be in a hurry because you want it to go well, not fast necessarily. Mm.
True that. Very cool. Well, yeah, I think it's cool. Ryan gives this new dimension about not only being a part of a group, but starting a group. And he was really great. He commented on our podcast episode page on the episode. What episode was that? 21?
Mm-hmm.
21. Yeah. So on that post on our blog, he put his contact info. So if you're interested in starting a group, Ryan would love to hear from you. And we talked about this in our rehash video as well. We're starting to make these rehash videos about our podcast. So there'll be a rehash video about this episode in the future. And so stay tuned until the end of the episode. We'll have a discussion question or a couple questions. And we'd love to hear your feedback. You can comment on our podcast episode page for episode 23. And then if your comment is interesting enough, we might read it on our next rehash video. And it'd be fun to like continue the conversation.
Yeah, give us good content.
We need good content.
Mm-hmm.
Or any content.
Just something. Last
episode, we had like 3 comments. And so that was a little bit of a light episode. But we love it when people comment. So let's go back to Patreon for a second.
Yeah, Patreon. Okay, so Patreon is a little thing that we do, which is a fundraising sort of website avenue for content creators. So what we do here at Your Other Brothers is we create podcasts and blogs, and we have this thing running. So if you like this show that we're doing now, you can help support us in the creating, keeping this content going, but also creating future content. And that is the next thing that we are shooting for, is the realm of video. We have a lot of dreams and aspirations and ideas for creating engaging video content for Your Other Brother's website. So things like testimonial videos or more creative projects like spoken words or short little narrative films and all different kinds of things that will help share our stories and get this message out there in a new dynamic way that isn't being told, and reach a whole new audience. So if that's something that you care about our mission, you like what you hear here, and would like to see it maybe in video form, then maybe that's something you want to contribute to. You can go over to patreon.com/yourotherbros and check out how you can support us and help us in that endeavor.
Yeah. Thank you for everybody who's already supported us. And yeah, if you are interested, check out patreon.com/yourotherbros. All right, Elliot, so tell us,
what?
We do this every week, tell us who our sponsor this week is.
This episode is so charged emotionally and in so many other ways that this—
Oh, it's charged.
It's charged. That this episode sponsor is electricity. We could not do this show literally without electricity, because we have to charge this, we have to use the computer and the microphones and all these other things, but also everything that we have done with this blog, meeting you, would not have been possible without electricity.
It's true.
There are so many things that electricity has given us
And what do we give electricity?
Exactly, nothing. We just use it and use it and use it.
We use it and abuse it.
Right.
With so, pornography.
Exactly. See?
It's all connected.
You can misuse electricity, or it can be channeled into something productive, like recording a podcast or watching Mean Girls. But anyways, electricity has done so much for us in our lives, and it helps make this show possible. And this episode specifically is brought to you by electricity. Thank you, all right. Electricity.
Buzz. All right. Thank you, electricity. All right, y'all. So the big elephant that's been sitting in this room for over a year now.
Over a year.
Is pornography. We're going to talk about pornography. Presumably, we're going to talk about pornography at large. Presumably, we're going to be talking about gay pornography, since that's probably what we tend to gravitate toward.
Don't assume.
I could be wrong, but that's what I'm assuming. Yeah, so Elliot, when's the last time you looked at pornography?
Oh, wow. So
let's go around the table.
Immediate question. Do I have to answer that?
I thought I would start this off on a light note. No, you don't have to answer that. I mean, you should if you're feeling like this is a safe place and you're telling your struggles. And you're
It's been longer than it normally has, so I'm confident enough to say that.
For me, I will say it's been shorter than it normally has. Mm. So we balance each other out there.
Yeah, switched roles.
What about you, Marshall? You haven't looked at porn in 50 years, huh?
No. Oh, no. I would say it's 1 month. I did have a weak moment about a month. Yes.
Oh, thanks for being honest. See, y'all, this is a culture of honesty and transparency, and we tell all. We tell most.
Most.
We
I'm going to say all.
Yeah, we're talking about pornography today, and it's something that, I mean, clearly affects most people. I don't think it's not something that is as escapable as it once was, and we'll talk about that. Ooh. Part of the reason why we have Marshall on the show is for that perspective, because Marshall comes from another generation from us, me and Elliot. True. Thank you for holding me up to a high standard.
Yes.
It would be cool if we had like even someone of this, because this generation is different than our generation. Like people,
a 16-year-old right now.
Yeah, 16-year-old right now is experiencing things and encountering things that even we as 29, 30-year-olds did not experience when we were their age.
Correct.
So it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's getting faster and faster. We're going to talk about all that today in this episode. But pretty much where we have to start with the kind of discussion about pornography that we're going to have today is defining the term and what are we even talking about? Because I think what we put this out to our Yabbers group on Facebook, our supporters on Patreon, we have a Facebook group that we are super grateful for because these guys, over 100 people in the group, they give us all this awesome content. We put it out to them earlier this week that we were doing a podcast on pornography and we got so many comments, dozens and dozens of comments. We put out these questions that we're going to be talking about today to them. And our very first question that we asked was, what is pornography? And it was very enlightening to read all of the responses to that because there were some similarities. You had some basic ones like literature, photography, video that's meant for sexual pleasure. You had people saying that it seeks to sexually arouse the user through explicit nudity and sexual acts. Anything meant for sexual pleasure that doesn't require another actual person. Any image, printed or digital, that provokes sexual arousal, a drug that sucks you in, causes adultery of the heart, affects your relationships with other people, and so on and so forth. And so you had a lot of those types of comments. But then you also had, there was some confusion too. And one person said, a solid definition of what constitutes porn is something I still need to have hardwired into my brain in order to figure out where is the line? Is what I'm looking at pornography? Is it not? What is pornography? Does it have to entail X, Y, and Z, or can it not? Something that I actually really resonated with. So one of our Yabbers talked about pornography, and he was like analyzing what had already been written because all these comments had already come through about, you know, it's literature, it's digital, it's printed, it's created with the intent of sexual arousal for someone else. And he said, it seems unclear whether some of you are classifying it based off the intent of the creator of the material or the intent of the viewer. Personally, I have cut out viewing traditionally pornographic material, but I still find myself occasionally viewing non-sexual images or even video of male nudity. I tend to feel that in these instances, the material functions as porn for me, even if that wasn't the original intent. Yeah. And I resonate with that a lot because, and we'll talk about my journey as this episode unfolds. For me, hardcore pornography has never resonated. I've actually never watched what you would probably describe or define as hardcore pornography. It's always been other stuff and some intended to create sexual arousal that would certainly be classified as pornography. I don't think there'd be any debate about it. but then plenty of other things, other videos, other things that are accessible, images on the internet that I don't believe were created for sexual arousal. I don't think it was, but the way I'm wired and the way I operate, I latch onto those videos and those images and I make them pornographic in my mind, in my fantasy, in my thought life. So it's a tricky thing. I don't know. I'm curious about your guys' thoughts to what even pornography is. How is it defined?
Well, yeah, when I first was reading some of the comments, and that is what many people were saying, was that its intent is for sexual arousal. Like, that's why that defines it as pornography. But like you, and I think most people probably, the first thing that they see that sexually arouses them in an image or something isn't pornography. For me, it was like underwear ads in Sears catalogs or something, you know? Like, or fitness magazines or something that had really no sexual angle to it at all, but it definitely intrigued me sexually. So yeah, and I've in many places too taken things that weren't meant for sexual purposes and turned them sexual myself. So yeah, is it the intent or is it the viewer? I think clearly if it was created for that intent, it's pornography, but I don't think it's just that cut and dry and that simple. I think, yeah, we bring a lot to it, how you view it. But that conversation has been being had for centuries in terms of like, what is art and is it the intent of the artist or the viewer or who defines it? So this is like a lifelong sort of philosophical debate that I don't think we're going to be able to settle, but I think it's interesting to bring that up. Is it the intent or the viewer who defines it? I would say it's both. And
right. Well, my comment is of course based on, just what Jesus himself said. I mean, he was, someone was asking him about sin, and he said, it's not just a sin to murder someone, but if you're angry at your brother without a cause, that's sin in your heart also. And then he said, so he was giving different examples of ways that you could sin in your heart. And one of them, he said, if you look at a woman to lust after her, that is sin. Now, I, of course, think that applies to us too, even if it's not a woman you're lusting after. If you're looking in order to feel something sexual, then that qualifies as a sin. And that's the sort of basis of pornography, is looking at something to lust after it.
Do you guys happen to look up the etymology of pornography? You want to take a crack of what, if you break it down by its roots, what pornography means?
I know that the first part, the porn, comes from a Greek word that meant prostitute, I heard. And then the agraphy just means visual display. So visual display of a prostitute, I think, is what the literal meaning is.
That's basically, yeah. Do you have a different, there's different like,
yeah, I mean,
the way
like,
you can interpret agraphy.
Yeah, agraphy can mean writing or drawing or, like cartography is drawing maps. Photography, you have the agraphy in there. That's the, like, drawing of images captured, you know, through a camera. Or so it's sort of like a writing. Mostly it's originally came from writing, I think. But it translating things down onto paper or something. communication through a visual form in some sense, I think, is agraphy. And porn, I've heard different things for porn. Like, I've looked into different things. Yeah, that there's like porni or porne is a Greek word that could mean a prostitute, but then there's porneas, which is a Greek word that means like fornication or uncleanness. So it could mean various elements of the same. Either way, it's the same thing. Like, you can't break it down to mean anything else other than really what it is. But what do you have to say about this, Tom? You're like looking at your phone. So do you have more to say?
I'm contrasting and comparing both of what y'all said. No, you basically hit it on the head. I had that. Yeah, you have porny. It's a fun one to say.
Porny.
Yeah, to be prostitute, and then graph, to write. And so you have. Yeah. This original definition as any work of art or literature depicting life of prostitutes or a prostitute lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously morphed and evolved as culture has morphed and evolved over the years. And so so some people may not have known that. That's your little trivia fact for the day.
Yeah,
when you're sitting in the bar and it's trivia night and they ask you what pornography's etymology is, you now know the answer.
Yeah, I when I was in college, I actually took a class on beauty and spirituality, and we discussed beauty and ugliness and attraction and all sorts of interesting things. And so we were studying it, and we broke it down when we were discussing about it, that porneia, meaning unclean or fornication, is like a perversion of something good. And so in some senses, porneia in its root form is like wickedness or evil. Because it's unclean. And then ography, you can break it down. Yeah, writing, any writing or imagery. So it can come down to art. That's what all art is, ography of some kind. And so in some senses, it could be a direct translation. You could say that it's evil art or unclean art.
So one of our yabbers wrote a really great comment defining pornography as a counterfeit. And he said, "We come to it seeking intimacy, but it leaves us quite alone. It depicts things of great beauty, the naked human body and sexual intimacy, but it does so in a way that is degrading both to the persons pictured and the persons viewing it. Pornography presents us with bodies rather than persons. In the words of Pope John Paul II, there is no dignity when the human dimension is eliminated from the person. In short, the problem with pornography is not that it shows too much of a person, but that it shows far too little." And I thought that was an interesting perspective. I've never had it put quite that way. I heard it put quite that way about it's like showing a lot, but it's actually in a twisted, very real way. It's actually taking so much away from what this person is. And I want to ask you guys if you ever like think about the people, like when you're watching the people, the videos or the ads or the images, like do you ever think about that person's journey or how they got there, what they're doing there? Because that's admittedly something I try not to think about, but I'm a thinker, I'm an overanalyzer, and I'm so always like thinking of these things in the back of my head, like, gosh, like what is that person's life like? Where are they at now? You know, who knows when this was recorded or this image was taken, and like where are they at today? And like, do you ever think about that? I'm curious from the other side of the screen, what y'all's perspective is.
Absolutely, I think about those things. I am overwhelmed with those thoughts because I don't know if this is just the way that I'm hardwired in my personality or my strength being connectedness. It's one of my biggest strengths. And I think about all of those things. The minute I see a person, I think they had a childhood. What was their childhood like? What are their parents like? Do they have friends? What are their hopes and dreams? How did they, is this, did they plan this or did they hit hard times and this is where they feel like they're. I'm overwhelmed with those sorts of thoughts when I see a pornographic image and I feel heartbroken and I feel sad for them and I feel confused. And yeah, so I definitely have brought a lot of those things into it. And then also, I sort of bring in this weird angle of the counterfeit illusion aspect of it not being real because it's filmed, at least in terms of filming and like images are different. Well, not necessarily, but. I've spent time working on like reality TV shows and things, and I've seen a lot of behind the scenes of what reality is, and they present a lot of pornographic films and videos and images as being real, or that these people have emotional connections or attractions, or there's intimacy, or there's all these sorts of things. And then you find out that the reality is this thing's edited, it's tweaked, it's airbrushed, it's, you know, all these things go into it to make it the most appealing that it can be. And it's not what it shows. And so you know that when you're looking at this thing, that these people aren't really feeling the things that they're feeling. They're not, it's acting and it's an illusion. And these are real people that have real lives. And I'm overwhelmed right now thinking about it.
Yes, I, you know, the thought definitely enters my mind, you know, again, how whatever they're doing will have consequences in their future. For example, what if somebody recognizes them 2 years from now based on, you know, something they have online, you know, and, you know, it could damage someone's career if they're doing something else. There could be, I mean, and that's just one small thing. I mean, obviously, I think about more, not so much where they came from and who they are. I think a little bit about that, but I think a lot more of, oh, how is this going to hurt them in the future?
Yeah, there was one time I actually had a friend in Los Angeles, and he actually met a porn star on an airplane, was sitting next to them. And this was probably one of the time when I really started thinking about those things, because at that point, I kind of, I think, just pushed most of my mental processes aside when I was interacting with pornography because I didn't want to think about it. But I remember this being a real big catalyst for the way in which I changed viewing it. But he was saying that he met this porn actor on an airplane, and he was telling him just how miserable his life was. and how his physical health, he was actually a gay porn actor, so how his physical health was falling apart, and he had to pay all this money for surgeries and just to maintain like all this stuff that was being damaged and taken from him because of this career in pornography and how harmful it was to his body and his health. And it just like really made me feel heartbroken for his story. And in some senses, if we are the people who are engaging in watching it, we are responsible for perpetuating it. And that made it, that humanized it for me in a way that it hadn't been before hearing that story.
Yeah, that's tough. That's why I try not to think of those things, but then they're unrelenting thoughts that I can't totally shush away because, yeah, we are contributing to this epidemic. It's just like it seems like it keeps growing year to year. And with more technology, it feels like it's more pervasive than ever before. This leads us into our next little segment, little topic, is the whole age of discovery. When did we learn that this was even a thing? So we had a lot of diversity in the Yobbers group. We had someone discover it when they were 14, another 13, age 11, 10th grade, 27, 28, 9 years old in my friend's dad's garage. Yeah, I mean, pretty much across the board from the single digits, 9 years old to, and sometimes a little later, 20s, 30s, depending how old our Yobbers are. But yeah, I wanted to go around and ask you guys, when did you discover pornography? For myself, and again, it's a tricky question because, like, again, what do you define as pornography? Because when I was a kid, similar to you, Elliot, like the Kmart ads, this is going to be my little vendetta against Kmart. It started at a young age because I would see the Kmart ads in, like, the underwear ads or the swimming trunk ads. And then for those that don't know, I actually worked for Kmart for a single horrible month of my life. And so I have this long pent vendetta against Kmart for putting me on this awful course. So there's that when I was like, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. And then first time I actively sought out what you would consider pornography, though, would probably be when I was 19 and I had my own laptop and I had a locked door and I could, you know, have the Wi-Fi code and I had my own access. That was the first time in my life that I intentionally sought it out, found it, or it found me, or however you would define it. So for me, 19, probably a late bloomer in this day and age. I feel like I survived it for a lot of years, but yeah, it found me before too long. What about you, Elliot?
Yeah, I was about 10 or 11 was when, I mean, like you, I was drawn in first, I think, by more innocent things, just ads and things like that, magazines. But I honestly can't remember the exact first time that I saw pornography, like intended pornography. I know I had a lot of friends, and around that time they were very curious about naked women. So there was a lot of, like, amongst my friends searching the internet. At that point in time, internet was like very small. There was no YouTube. There was no videos on the internet, really. It was mostly only photos, and dial-up internet took 100 years to get one picture downloaded, you know, so it took a long time to find these sorts of things. But there were late night, you know, things that happened on TV, channels that would come up. There were always women, and my friends, whenever we had sleepovers or things like that, would be searching for these, like, shows of, like, Girls Gone Wild or whatever, you know, and scandals. I was always involved, and so I knew that there was the content out there of, like, naked people, and I knew at that age that I wasn't really attracted to women. But one of my friends had I'm not sure exactly what kind of magazine, but it was a pornographic magazine that his uncle had, and he was showing it to me, and I pretended to like what they all liked because that's how I had to fit in. So they were all goo goo gaga over these you know, Girls Gone Wild, and I was like, yeah, it's really great, right, isn't it, you know, just to fit in. And so they thought I was really interested in these things. Really, I was kind of uncomfortable and confused, but also curious. So anyway, he had a magazine, a pornographic magazine that his uncle had, and he found it, and in it, though, there was actually, I mean, there was both male and female. There's naked men and women in this magazine, and I found myself very drawn to look at the naked men in the magazine. So I was young, yeah, 10, 11, 12, and it progressed from there, and I started finding it on the internet myself. But like I said, it took forever. But yeah, I was young, definitely young, way too young. What about you, Marshall?
Well, I can certainly reveal my age. I mean, most people know about how old I am anyway. I was actually born in 1959. That makes me 58 years old. I was, of course, I became aware of my sexual desires when I was about 12 years old, which would be about, seventh grade, middle school. And I knew that I was attracted to men rather than women. And I was not, I knew I better not admit it in any way because the culture I was in was one where I would get bullied to the extreme if I revealed it. So I had to, I was scared of ever appearing gay in any way, shape, or form. So that colored everything. There were, I remember some guys at my school, just in moments when there were no teachers around, lunch, whatever, that would pull out, a Playboy magazine or something like that, which is definitely pornography. And they would look at it, and I would kind of look over their shoulder. And now I was calling myself a Christian at the time, so I didn't really let them know that. But I mean, I kind of looked, and it was straight porn, of course. And so I was not, I realized this, that it didn't do much for me. But so I never really looked at much. I just kind of would look over a guy's shoulder as I was walking by or whatever. But it was, something that I had seen in that way. But porn was somewhat different during that time. Of course, there was no internet. This was back in the, well, I was 12 years old in 1971, so that was a while ago. Back in the 1970s, there was certainly no internet. There were really even no videotapes. What you had to do if you wanted porn was you had to either go to an X-rated movie theater, which everyone would see you walk in, and there was a barrier there where you knew if you walked in, you were opening yourself up publicly where everyone knew what you were doing. Same thing with, as they called, adult bookstores, which those were the two places to get pornography. And if you walked into an adult bookstore, you would, again, it was looked down upon socially. It was still considered, you're a pervert if you do this. But it was legal and they had it out there. But of course, I knew that all this stuff, it was probably all straight porn, and I wasn't all that affected by that. And so I just sort of said, well, I'm not going to take a chance on being seen going into one of these places and seeing if they have any gay porn there. I didn't want to just deal with any of it, and I thought, yeah, it was just not worth it. So I clearly, there was such a barrier to it that I really didn't seek out pornography in that era. I didn't really see certainly gay pornography until the internet came around in the 1990s, and I was in my 30s. But it was definitely something that I would have been tempted by, but there was, again, such a not just a social barrier, but just kind of I would was embarrassed to be seen near one of these places that were, like I said, an X-rated movie theater, adult bookstore.
Yeah, it seems from all the stories I hear from older people, it seems like you really had to take that initiative if you really wanted to watch these things or look at these things back then. And so, in many ways, yeah, you were spared many years, Marshall, from having to deal with that on a regular basis compared to this generation. And I guess I was spared in a way too. It's a blessing and a curse because I grew up very isolated and have many friends growing up. So, like, sleepovers and having other boys to connect with, like, that really wasn't a thing for me, middle school, high school. I remember, like, I actually do remember as this conversation has been unfolding. I remember the first time I guess I saw what would have actually been pornography because I went to a Christian school, and one of the other guys was like, it was like study hall or something. I forget. We were in class, I believe, but he was like holding up his textbook, or he was like he had his textbook held up, but then he like angled it toward me, and it was actually a woman, like with her top off. She was just totally exposed, and he was just showing it to me and like raising his eyebrows like, look what I've got something cool. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that, and obviously it did nothing to arouse me or whatever, but it was definitely shocking. Like, I guess I was probably 14 maybe when that happened, but it was a really quick glance. Like, I didn't really get to like analyze it or look at it, but that was the first time I even knew that anything like that could even exist, because of course I'd looked at the Kmart ads, as I said, curses Kmart. But other than that, like I never, you know, internet wasn't a thing, dial-up internet. We had the family computer, and so that really wasn't an option for me. There are definitely stories in our group about people who looked up stuff on the family computer and they got found out by their mom or dad. We'll talk about those stories in a second. But yeah, for me, it was just like that one quick image of a woman when I was 13, 14. And then, you know, gay pornography wasn't a thing until I discovered that world at 19 in college. I was a sophomore in college. So I feel like I was spared many years, but again, it caught up with me. This was an interesting story. One of our yobbers, who we've actually met, he came to visit us. This was a good story. He said his progression, so of discovering pornography, it was a progression of wanting to find out how the adult male body was supposed to look like. It started with Greek statues, Wikipedia articles about the penis, forums where guys were showing off, and finally to gay porn. I was afraid to look at straight porn because I had been told all my life that girls in porn are pretending and my vision of them would be spoiled. And so I can resonate with that actually a lot too, is because I grew up in a home where sex was not discussed, it was not talked about, and puberty and the changing body was not discussed or talked about. And so I had to look, I had to be like very sneaky. We had this like really, this childhood encyclopedia. I remember this one really vividly. It was a picture book, like a picture childhood encyclopedia. It was like 6 inches, yeah, about a 6-inch encyclopedia. And it was alphabetical, so you could like flip through it. And so I think there was like, I think it was the H section, like human anatomy. I think that's what section it came from. So you saw like, you know, those human anatomy with like the muscles, mm-hmm. the red, you know, you can picture now. Yeah. And so there's a male on one side and a female on the other side. And I was just looking at it fascinated because I was trying to figure out like, what is all this? what is that called? What does that do? And there definitely was that fascination of looking for stuff. And over the years, as I grew up and as the internet became more prevalent, like that definitely became more of a thing. Learning just initially just wanting information because it was never verbally told me, but then curiosity getting the better of you tends to take you down roads that you didn't anticipate at the start. Did y'all ever have to like, were y'all told these things?
Not really, but like I had brothers maybe and male friends, so it's sort of like I knew what, I don't know, I was not as curious about that, like what would the male body look like, but that was my excuse that I had prepared if I ever got caught.
What a smart boy you were.
So that was the excuse that I would have said is, I'm just curious about my body and I'm changing and I don't know what it's going to look like.
Really? As a 12-year-old, 14-year-old, you had that already planned out?
Wow. I did.
Good for you. So resourceful.
I don't know.
By the way, my parents were, I don't know if it was typical for Christians of the era, but they were both Christian. They clearly told me the basic facts of life and how sex works and everything when I was probably 10 or 11 years old. And they were not, at first I really didn't believe them, but then I thought about it a little bit and I went, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But it just, at first I literally didn't believe them for whatever reason. That was just my response, I guess, a child of that age. But then, of course, I obviously found out that is what happens. But in any event, I hear many stories today, which I hope it's okay to interject this. I've talked to many guys that were, you know, that are millennial generation, and it's very common for them to say their parents never said a word about sex. And then I asked them, well, how did you find out about it? And he said, the internet. Virtually every man, at least, that I have talked to has said that. There's just a common thing where parents don't talk about sex at all.
Do you think that's special to this generation? Do you think, like, they don't know, just because of their upbringing, the way they were raised, or I don't know. I'm curious, like, generation to generation, what the topic of sex, like, how that translates into conversations with your kids. Like,
well, I know if I ever have children, which probably isn't going to happen, but if I ever do, I'm going to talk about it early and often and normal. Like, this is normal life. I'm not going to make it this big, horrible, traumatic explosion that goes off when you hit puberty and then it's so awkward and we can't talk about it. I don't know, like the way that it was handled amongst me and my generation.
I remember, Elliot, I think it might have just been a conversation you and I had. I forget under what context, but I remember you brought up this point a long time ago. I think it was you. Feel free to take her.
Okay.
But it was like, so our parents did not grow up with the internet, did not grow up with the ease of finding pornography as we are now experiencing in this generation. And so to some extent, you can't necessarily blame parents for bringing up the topic of pornography, because again, you would have to be very, in their generation, in Marshall's generation, you would have to go to a theater, you'd have to go to a store, you'd have to go somewhere where you're risking your identity with other people watching to get this thing that you want. And they raised us as this new thing. The internet was becoming prevalent and they had computers and now phones, like 9-year-olds have phones now that they can see anything on the world, on the World Wide Web. And it's like, to some extent, you can't necessarily blame, because how do you deal with this new thing that just came up that's never been priorly discussed? So, so in some, to some extent, I can like excuse the parents that we had for not talking about pornography, but man, yeah, like for our generation, I would like to think we're more prepared to have that conversation than the previous generation, but I don't know, like, it seems like a common theme amongst people in our generation. Parents did not talk about pornography in particular, if not sex altogether.
In my experiences with my friends who are our age or in their 30s who have children now, I've seen them talk about sex and these sorts of topics more openly with their children. And that inspires me and gives me hope that, yeah, I think it's true that we're more aware of the danger or like just the cultural context that we're in. And so from what I've seen amongst, my friends who have children, that they're doing a better job.
Good.
I hope so. So let's get to the exciting part of our show. Have you ever been caught in the act watching pornography, confronted? We had a lot of, gosh, we had so many exciting stories in the Yarvis group. I'm not going to read all of them, but yeah, so you have the classic story, the family computer, and either a brother finding it or mom and dad checking the search history, finding it. Those are increasingly common. Once my best friend found it on my phone, asked me about it. A particularly, and it feels weird to say fun, but it's a great story. I like this story for all the detail. He was never caught, but came close once. In college, after my roommate left for class, I put one of his dumbbells against the door and bolted the door. He forgot something and came back 5 or 10 minutes later. He unlocked the door and tried to open it, but the dumbbell bought me enough time to hide what was happening, and I mumbled something about why I left it there. Just so much, so much going into that story. Specific. A dumbbell against the college dorm door. Yeah, for me myself, I have never been caught. Like I never used the family computer. That was never a thing. So I had my own computer and no one was ever monitoring my laptop. So when I discovered pornography at 19, it was just me finding it and I had to confess it. And so the first person I ever confessed it to, or I confessed it to both, was my mom and my dad. And I write about that in my book. That was a fun experience, fun story to translate. But yeah, never been caught. I never had that shame factor come in. but Elliot, so you had an excuse plans, but you were never caught. Is that what you're saying?
I was never caught looking at gay pornography, no.
Oh, gay pornography.
Correct.
But you were caught looking at other pornography?
Yeah. So I've never been caught, like nobody's walked in on me or caught me in the act or anything like that ever in my whole life. And there was a part of me, especially when it was fresh and new and I was feeling like, oh my gosh, this is actually probably a problem. I'm overwhelmed by this. I was hoping kind of that somebody would find me so that I had an excuse to change or to get freed from it, because somebody would come in and help me. But I couldn't open the door myself. I needed somebody to like bust in and change my situation. So in some weird way, I wanted to get caught, but I never was. I had an excuse ready though. It was so many different conflicting dynamics surrounding that topic. But one time, one of my friends was over, one of the people who, you know, we watched Girls Gone Wild with or whatever, and they were very curious of the female body. And they were one of my best friends, and so I indulged their requests. And so there was one time where we were at the family computer. We only had a family computer, so most of my internet, like, pornography stumbles were on the family computer in the kitchen. So I had to get up in the middle of the night, and yeah, it was very dramatic because at any point somebody could have just walked out into this open space. So very risky. But anyway, so one time my friend was staying over the night and he wanted to see, my parents were gone, I don't know where they were. He wanted to see naked pictures of Britney Spears because that was a big thing in that time. and so I indulged him and I typed it in, nude pictures of Britney Spears.
Hit me baby one more time.
That's right. And I don't think we found anything, to be honest. because I don't remember seeing anything in my head, but I remember us looking for it and kind of being frustrated, like searching together for it. And the next day, my friend was still there because he spent the night. He just left. And so I'm there, my older brother's there, and we're sort of just in the living room and we're playing with Legos or something. And my mother is on the computer and she says, "Who was looking for nude pictures of Britney Spears? What is going on?" And I just like go quiet, you know, I shut down. And my older brother's like, "Dude, you gotta hide your search history. I'll show you how to do it later." And so I remember that like moment. And then later that night before bed, because we were young, you know, 12 or 13 or something. And my dad came to me into my bedroom before bed. And he said, sat on the end of the bed. And he said, "Now, your mother told me what you did. And I know that you're curious about these things. And it's good that you're curious about those things. That's normal. But you can't do it. It's bad. So I'm not gonna punish you because it's normal, but it's wrong. So don't ever do it again." And I just remember being so confused. If this is normal and it's good, then why? If it's like normal, then why is it bad? And if it's bad, then why am I not being punished? Yeah. And so it was like very confusing dynamics. Like, this is something that everybody does and it's normal, but don't do it because it's bad. And I had total mixed messages. So that just confused me more than anything else.
The classic Band-Aid response, just like slap a Band-Aid on it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it too much. And hopefully it goes away.
Yeah, but very strange.
What about you, Marshall? Were you ever caught in the act, found out?
Yes, but obviously not by my parents. I mean, again, there were no computers. I never had anything, pornographic in the house. Because, my parents were Christians and they wouldn't keep anything pornographic in the house. I was much older. I was probably in my early 50s, to be honest. I was living another place in another house, and I was, alone in my room and, looking at the computer, something I shouldn't have. And one of my roommates literally walked in and saw that I was quickly flipping the laptop closed. And he was a Christian. And he said, "What's happening here?" And I said, "Well, you caught me looking at something I shouldn't have." And anyway, it was very embarrassing because he looked up to me as a, a good example, a Christian example. And here I had failed and he caught me. we talked it through and, with God's help, certainly I knew God forgave me, but he forgave me. And I, have always had I still have something of a friendship with him. He still respects me as a Christian. He understands. But it was very embarrassing to me, especially because of my age, and I'm supposed to be an example, and look what I did and look what he saw. That was just bad.
So was this roommate of yours, was he significantly younger? Yes. Or was he your age?
He was probably 25 and I was early 50s. Oh, okay. Yeah, it was bad.
That's an interesting dynamic, yeah, because I guess from our generation, it's being found out by our parents or like an older brother or something, and that's an interesting perspective from your end to have someone younger than you.
Yeah, well.
Even like half your age discovered.
Right, because again, they thought of me as a mature and whatever, strong and whatever in my faith, and here I fell in that way and they caught me. That is very difficult coming from that perspective.
I failed,
not just myself, it affected everybody else.
So let's talk about pornography. I'm curious to hear about the pornographic habits, temptations that are present in this call right now. I mentioned earlier how for myself, I've actually never witnessed what someone would typically classify as hardcore pornography or hardcore gay pornography for that matter. I've always been more drawn to softcore, if that's a word. Mm-hmm. Is that a word? Softcore pornography, gay pornography. And like, I don't know, the whole foreplay of it, the whole like one guy meets another guy and then, they're talking and then it goes from there. And it's like very slow. It's a slow build. And Elliot, you and I have talked about this before a lot of times, actually. It's like almost like when the clothes come off, that's when it like becomes boring. And that's when it becomes too, at least for me, I'll just speak for myself. It becomes too robotic, too animalistic. It doesn't really appeal to me. I guess I'm more of an emotional person than a physical person. I mean, sure, I have physical needs. I have physical desires, but I'm way more drawn by an emotional connection. So it's like when these two guys or three guys or whatever in a video are interacting with each other, and it's like, you know, everyone's wearing clothes and they're just getting to know each other, whatever the situation is. That to me is way more, it's almost the anticipation of it is way more arousing than the actual act itself for me. And so it's been tricky because when I write about pornography, when I'm blogging about pornography, for instance, it almost feels like I'm coming at it from a lot of times what I feel like is a different perspective than a lot of people, because I certainly know plenty of people who are addicted to hardcore pornography, have witnessed countless hours of footage, have downloaded videos. Like, that's something I've never done. I've never downloaded a video or gone to a site to do that. There's actually been a couple of times, I don't know if I could count it on one hand or two hands or three hands, but there have been some times where I've gone to like explicitly pornographic websites and I see the images and there's an instant recoil where I'm like, there's the initial curiosity of going there, but then once I get there, it's like, oh, too much, like too much to look at, too much, not what I want. At the core of what I want is a human connection, emotional connection. And so that's not what I want. It's just so purely physical and it just doesn't do anything for me, if I'm just being honest. That's just my story. That's just my experience. And I'm, you know, cut from a different cloth than most in many ways, but I'm curious, just, I don't know. I'd be curious to compare. I feel like in this room, in this metaphorical room, we're all emotional people. Like, I know, Elliot, you're a very emotional guy. Marshall, I know you're a very emotional guy. But I'm curious if that's translated to your pornographic habits without getting too graphic, I guess. But what do you say, Elliot?
Yeah, I resonate so much with what you've just said, that I am so emotionally driven and pornography is so often so just physical. And it doesn't satisfy me. And there's a part of me that's curious. I want to see what it all looks like, mm-hmm. and whatever. So there's a part of me that is curious. And I've seen everything I don't want to see. There's some things I wish I could unsee that I've seen. I've seen a lot of different things. And I regret a lot of those decisions. And most of the time, there are some things I'm actually repulsed by, like completely disgusted by, that I've seen. And I tend to, like you, I'm more drawn to the emotional things. Most pornographic videos, it's the leading up to the sex that's actually the most appealing to me. The conversations, the relating, or even just the kissing. Mm-hmm. Kissing and shirtless, taking their shirts off or clothes off. But really when the underwear comes off, I'm kind of bored. Like, that's the part where I'm like, okay, move on to the next video, because now it's just going to become, like you said, this physical, robotic, animalistic. It's like, okay, they can just, I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me to just see their bodies moving anymore. Like, I'm in there for their emotional, the intimate connection. And that's definitely what porn has become for me, is a way to try to connect things that feel disconnected in my life. And at first I wasn't aware of that, because it was kind of on autopilot. But the older I've gotten and the more I've processed my own experiences, I've been able to see that the reason I'm using porn, I use it like a drug, is because I'm trying to mend something that was broken. I'm trying to connect something that has been disconnected. And somebody actually gave me this advice when I was in college and I was struggling. He was sort of a mentor of mine, and I was, coming to him and saying, I'm just so frustrated with pornography, and I'm addicted to it, and I hate it, and I don't want this in my life anymore, and it's driving me crazy. And I just want to cut it out. And he said, okay, well, next time you watch it, think about why you're watching it. Like, don't try to stop it. Just think about it for a moment. Mm-hmm. And really just sit with, like, why do you find that person attractive? Like, why are you looking for that person? And I think I've talked about this before, maybe even on the podcast. But that was a really enlightening moment for me, because I started to see why I was watching porn, and then relating it, connecting it to something that was going on in my life or in my heart. And then I started to be able to see, like, why I was going to it, and then I'm more aware of it than doing it and then feeling frustrated. I can sort of see it coming sooner, because I know why I'm going to it. And what I realized, I don't think this is true for everybody, but this is how it works for me in my head and my heart when in my relationship with pornography, is that I go to it to mend a connection. So either I feel disconnected from myself, or I feel disconnected from other people around me, or I feel disconnected from God. And that's sort of why I go to it. But what I've noticed is that, like, when I'm angry at myself, or I feel like I'm not who I'm supposed to be, or living up to my perfect standard of myself or something, I will find pornographic images or models or actors or whatever that look like the idealized version of what I could be. And so I'm trying to, like, reconnect myself, and it's a horrible attempt. It's a terrible solution. I'm not saying that this is the way to do it, but this is what I've noticed I've done. Or if I'm upset with people, or I feel disconnected from my friends or my family or relationships with certain people, I tend to go to pornography to fix those needs. And I'll notice that if I'm upset with my peers, I find other men that look like the people that I feel disconnected from. Or if it's, I feel disconnected from my father or adult authority figures in my life, I'll look at men that are older than me or things like that. So it's so obvious how clearly connected my pornography usage is to my brokenness in relationships, and that it's all about connection. And that's why I can't even watch pornography that has more than two people in it, because to me it's such an intimate thing that if you put all these people in it, or three people, it just ruins it. It's not this connection anymore. Yeah. So it's very emotional.
Yeah. The psychology of pornography. That's so interesting. Because you could talk to 100 different people and have 100 different quirks and things that people are drawn to or not drawn to, and things that turn them on and don't at all. And it all comes down to, like, your upbringing, your brokenness, and everything that's happened to you over the course of a lifetime. What about you, Marshall?
With me, I certainly don't focus as much on the physical as I do on the emotional, kind of like you two. But I think I'm a little less to that extreme than you are. I have seen some hardcore pornography, not the extreme stuff, but whatever you want to call it, just plain hardcore pornography. What appeals to me, again, it's the idea of connection. But also the idea of making someone else happy, which that's not real happiness. It has long-term bad consequences. So you're not helping the other person when you're doing what's done there. But, one thing that really makes me happy, I guess it's my personality type or whatever, is when I can make someone else happy. And, so when I see that going on, even in such a, crass way, that's sort of what draws me in. And, so I try to, think through what one thing that I use to, fight that is I keep thinking, well, does this really make them long-term happy? as far as it goes though, it's, very similar to you. The part that would appeal to me more is the part before the sexual act. It's the love expressed or whatever, even though it's a very bad kind of love. And then also the, there's some later on that, during the sexual part that would appeal to me sometimes if it involves, again, making somebody happy.
Yeah.
But for me, when I look at porn, it is normally a time when I am feeling depressed and isolated, and I don't feel like there are people around me that I can care for, help, or that care about me. I think that's, so there is more of a human connection thing in me that I'm somehow trying to meet in that really bad way.
Yeah, Marshall, as you were talking, Elliot and I are just like looking at each other and our eyes are lighting up, and we're like thinking on the same page about different personality types. We're all about personality types in this community, probably too much, but we love it. And so the Enneagram, you were describing yourself as a two, as a helper, and you get a joy, like a genuine joy and thrill out of helping somebody and providing something for somebody. And we're much more on the opposite extreme. We're a four type, me and Elliot, and how we want someone to save us and someone to rescue us and someone to fulfill us. And I don't know, we had this, I was just thinking as you were talking, I was like, I'm curious how all the different Enneagram types respond to pornography, what their response is and how their different habits, like what do sevens How do sevens go to pornography? What's going on psychologically there amongst the sevens, the adventurous type, the happy-go-lucky, the enthusiast type?
Yeah.
And then contrast that with a two, with a four, with a five, six. You know, it'd be interesting just to like dive deeper into that, the psychology of pornography. Pornography and the Enneagram.
Yeah, that's definitely like a book title that I just thought of that should be written. Because yeah, I imagine that what's drawing everybody in is a core desire that they have. And we're trying to all meet it in different ways through the same sort of venue, but we're all approaching it from totally different sides. Because I, to be honest, I've never thought about what the other person is like in looking at pornography. I'm like, I'm not thinking about what you were talking about, Marshall. So it's just so interesting to me, though, that's what draws you in. Yeah. I'm fascinated right now. I need to do research.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of unrelated to pornography, but similar to what we're talking about here, and that is when I tell people that if there's no mutual attraction, I'm not tempted at all act out with them, I'm very serious. In other words, if I feel like it's not going to make them happy, they're not attracted to me, there's no way, no matter how attracted to them I am, I'm going to be aggressive in any way,
right?
Because I want to make them happy. For whatever reason, it really affects the way I relate to people and even the way I'm tempted sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
We'll have to do another podcast.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, another podcast, Pornography and the Enneagram. We'll get Matthew
in here.
We
got to get one of each time.
Yeah, we'll get Matthew in here. He's an eight. We'll get, we'll have to convince Bradley. He's a nine.
I'm curious about five.
Yeah, no, that's super fascinating. We'll have to get into that someday. People, then anyone who searches podcasts for Enneagram, they'll find our find a wealth of information on our podcast. Stay tuned, everybody. All right, so we kind of need to wind this down, but it's like, it's a shame, but we'll have plenty of time to continue to have more discussions about pornography.
Yeah,
rest
there's so
assured.
Many angles to talk about this.
But we do sort of need to wind it down, just talking about coping. Like, how do you combat something that's so pervasive? And we've talked about it, we referenced it, but technology today, it's making it easier and easier and easier. Like I said, kids discovering it 9 years old on an iPad or you know, laptops in their room, cell phones. Everyone's got a cell phone now. It's so prevalent. So I'm going to ask you guys, and I'm going to ask myself, because I'm still figuring this out myself. How do you not watch pornography? How do you stay away when it's just everywhere? We had a lot of suggestions in the group. One person uses 12-step groups like Sexaholics Anonymous. I've blogged about my experience with Sexaholics Anonymous and how it was helpful for a season of my life last year. And even a couple podcasts ago, we talked about support groups. And I think that can definitely be a piece of the puzzle. Another Yabber said, parents tried filters, but where there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of amens in the room.
I'm too technologically savvy.
Yeah, we had someone mention that, yeah, he's like super technological. And so there's always a workaround. There's always a way to crack the system and always defeat it. People talked about accountability with others, using accountability software and devices that have been helpful for a time. Let me ask you guys that. Have you tried accountability software? Have you tried downloading things? And did it work? Did it not work? For myself, I remember the only time I seriously... Well, actually, no, there were two times. There was one time I used an accountability software, and the way it worked was it didn't prevent porn, but it would send an email. So when you signed up, you picked two people, I think, one or two people, to be your accountability partner, and you put their email address. And so then this thing is running silently in the background as you're going to any website. And when you go onto something that it deems a suspicious website, it would send an email to your accountability partner. And so then they see, I think they get a daily, may not have been daily, it might have been weekly, but they'd get like a regular email that showed whether you looked at any suspicious sites or not. So if you looked at a suspicious site, then presumably your accountability partner would then hold you accountable and talk about that. And that worked for me for a season. It really depends on, I think, your relationship with the other person. And so with me and this other person, it wasn't a face-to-face relationship. It was actually a blogger. He no longer blogs in our community, but back in the day, like a decade ago, I had a fellow blogger as my accountability partner, and it was good for like not even a year maybe of my life. But as the friendship, as the relationship wanes, then it's just like, okay, then I think it would be more helpful and more beneficial if you had an actual face-to-face relationship where you're actually forced to see this person on a regular basis, daily, weekly, monthly, what have you. So I don't know. There was that. I also downloaded the software that would actually physically block sites, but then it slowed my whole computer down. It was not to me, maybe it would have been worth it, but to me, it wasn't worth the trade-off of having to wait an extra 15 seconds to access any website just because this thing is running in the background. So I haven't had the best of luck with software. What about you guys?
Nope.
It doesn't work. Moving on.
Doesn't work. Well, yeah, I think because I'm super techno savvy that I can find a way around every single one I have had, and I have found my way around them all. To me, it feels like a cheap shot to just like, because you're not solving the problem. The problem is within me. And so if you're just stopping me from looking at it, it's not solving the problem that I still want to look at it. It's just making it easier for me to not get it, and or make it harder for me to get it. And so I understand that that can be a good step in like slowing you down so you can rethink about things and maybe it makes it easier for you. It has not been beneficial in my life. It does help in maybe preventing me from getting access to it sooner, and then I get frustrated and it may like stretch my time out between it. But I actually end up spending more time trying to find workarounds and dig through it. And if it was just unlocked and I could just get to it, it would be over in 10 minutes instead of this hour long drawn out process. So a part of me feels like it actually makes me work harder for it. And
everyone loves a good challenge, right? That, I've done the same
thing. Well, that's part of the thrill of it,
too. The thrill of the pursuit. Yeah.
And so, and for me, it doesn't really ultimately solve the problem. It may help slow me down. But, and then the other thing with like accountability partners or things like that, for me, it's only done more damage to those relationships because you're putting this really big unhealthy expectation upon them. And if they don't deliver or they don't follow through or they get tired or they have their own weaknesses, it just adds rifts in the relationship because then you have these expectations that go unmet and then you get frustrated and then you have, and then in all of those relationships I've had, it's done more harm than good to them. But that's my experience. I know that's not everybody's experience. I don't have much good stories to tell from that kind of stuff.
Well, with me, certainly years ago, 10 plus years ago, I tried certain software, giving someone else the password to it so that I couldn't have access to some of these sites without the other person entering a code, so that worked a little bit, but then again, I had so many problems as you described, slowing down the computer, preventing me from getting on the sites I needed to get on for various legitimate reasons. I just eventually dropped it because it was causing more problems than it was solving. Besides, the whole aspect of this other person becoming alienated from me because of whatever they were doing with, holding the password or holding me accountable when they received emails. Or, I tried different versions like what you described. So I kind of gave up on that. But I didn't use any electronic means or, technological means of accountability for the last probably 10 years. With the exception of my job, there are rules where we know that we are not supposed to look at pornography at work or, waste time on the internet on company computers. But they clearly define pornography as something that you can get fired for. I've never known of someone who has been, but I'm aware that, okay, they have monitoring software on there, and that if I went to some porn site, it might mean that I would lose my job. And that is enough of an incentive where, in that case, the electronic monitoring does keep me from ever going anywhere close to that. But other than that, just in my own personal phone, computer, whatever, it's caused more problems than it's solved. Personally, talking to someone that is a close friend has helped me, but that's not technological.
Right. Something that Elliot and I do, we'll share this, is that it's not a total fix. Like, it's something. It doesn't get to like our heart and what we actually want, and that's a deeper issue. But like something Elliot and I do, and it works because we live in the same house and we see each other all the time, we have restrictions on our phones. And so we'll have to physically put in the password if one of us needs to either update our apps or even to like download a new app. Like, we can't download specific chat apps or meetup apps or anything like that. Like, we can't access those because they're restricted and we have passwords that only each other knows. And so that's a helpful starting point. Again, it doesn't solve everything, and iPhones are tricky because there's like no way to cut off everything on an iPhone. And so, yeah, it's tricky. I've yet to find one that like totally works, but I think Marshall, you started hinting at what I want to move toward, which is like, yeah, it's not about necessarily restricting something. That can be a starting point, but it's like, what are we pining toward? What are we looking for? Mm-hmm. And what are the relationships in our life? Because again, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. And what we're looking for is connection. And so if we can have healthy connection, and whether that's in a quote unquote official accountability relationship or not, it's just good friends or a mentor relationship, whatever you want to label it or call it, I think that's ultimately what's going to be a more lasting solution than just having the right blocker or the right.
Yeah.
Because there's always a workaround. There's always something else you could do. There's like no way to cut everything off.
The problem is not the desire, it's the source. So we're like, we have legitimate needs and desires for intimacy and connection and love, and the problem is we're misplacing them into something else. So just cutting off where we're putting our, where we're going towards to find those things, just cutting that off is not going to solve the problem, that we still actually need to meet those in a different way, in a better way, in a healthy way. And yeah, the biggest porn resistor for me is healthy intimate connections with other men that I can give love and receive love from, and it meets those needs to where I don't want it. I don't need to go to porn for it. I don't need to, you know, if I'm drinking good wine, I don't need to go drink toilet water. But if I have nothing and I'm thirsty, I'm going to go to the toilet because that's the closest thing I can find. And that, often that's what porn is. It's a poor substitute trying to meet a legitimate need. And so, yeah, the best thing for me is, okay, well, I need connection with people and I need to focus on getting that. And if there's a disconnection, if somebody hurt me or I feel wounded or disconnected from that person, rather than going to porn to try to fix it, I need to go to that person and be honest and vulnerable, and or other people, and go to people, real living people, to try to get those needs met and share those things rather than going to a digital counterfeit.
Yes, I mean, I would definitely say the same thing for me, that, you know, I've clearly seen a pattern where, you know, there's no, you know, in my life, I say very little temptation. When I have close friendships, things are going well with those friendships, and I feel like I'm giving and receiving, you know, and I'm, you know, just happy in that. I have very little temptation to porn, especially, you know, when I'm also busy and, you know, when my life is much more normal. The problem happens when I'm isolated, alone. I feel like there's something wrong in a friendship and, you know, it's hurting me. And, so in those kind of situations, that's where I've retreated to it. So I know that that's true. So what I always do is I try to make sure that I'm in a situation where, you know, there's forgiveness on both sides if I've hurt someone or they've hurt me in whatever relationship. And then also that I do try to be, you know, around others, giving, even though I'm a little more of an introvert than an extrovert, I still make it a point that I'm going to be around people.
Yeah.
Not only is it important for me to have, you know, right relationships with others, I always think about, you know, what Jesus said with, there are two great commandments. One is love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. Well, we've talked about loving your neighbor as yourself. As long as you are in good connection with others, that helps. But love the Lord, to me, that's, of course, said first and very important. And the way I apply that is just, the truth is God himself is better than the pleasure of sin. He has, you know, he said, there are some references in Psalms, you know, I could go on and on, but basically that you've shown us the path of life and your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. He's promised us eternal joy, which is far better than anything we experience, you know, with any kind of whatever sexual sin. And if we think of it that way, that God is telling us to give up something lesser and we will get something greater from him, we can demonstrate our love to him by giving up this lesser pleasure. And if you always keep that in mind, that you love God with all your heart, that means you won't give place in your heart for things that God has said don't. So that whole idea helps me, is that I can literally demonstrate my love for God by obeying him when it's difficult, by saying no to this pleasure, because his pleasure is actually better. And I'm, you know, not just hoping for, but knowing that what I receive in my relationship with God will be worth far more than I can give up.
All right. So in closing, I'm going to read from actually a book that I referenced on a previous podcast. I think it was the Gay Sex Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Was it that one or was it? I don't know. I forget. But it's from Michael John Cusick's book, Surfing for God.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a great book. Totally recommend it. It's about pornography. It's about the heart. I mean, actually, the subtitle, it's called Discovering the Divine Desire Beneath Sexual Struggle. And it's a great resource on just understanding the whys of pornography. We started to dive into that a little bit, the psychology. But this excerpt is from his book. I wanted to read his what he calls the thirsts, the core thirsts that we have. Whenever I ask a man to make a list of what his soul is thirsty for, I may as well be speaking Cantonese. Early in my own healing journey, my counselor encouraged me to talk about my longings. It was like trying to describe gravity. So to give men a place to start, I explain that people generally share seven core thirsts. Though this list is not exhaustive, it offers a straightforward way for you to begin to put words to what lies below the surface of your life. Attention. I long for people to like me. I long for your embrace. Affection. I long to be enjoyed. I long to be delighted in. I long for you to take pleasure in who I am. Affirmation. I long to know I have what it takes. I long for your blessing. Acceptance. I long to belong. I long to be desired. Satisfaction. I long for fullness. I long for well-being. Significance. I long for impact. I long for meaning. I long to be powerful. Security. I long to know I will be okay. All of these core thirsts are God-given appetites and longings. Once you have identified your deepest desires, you can begin understanding why pornography is so alluring. You can see beyond the easy rationale of your body's libido to the underlying longings of your soul. The sexual images and experiences you crave represent the fulfillment of one or more of your seven core thirsts: to be seen and valued, to feel affection and love, to be affirmed in your manliness and desirability, and so on. Or at least they offer the illusion of all this in the moment. And so, my brothers, I affirm your core thirsts, the deep and often dark things you long for, your worth as a man and fellow brother. You are worthy of attention, to be noticed among others in a room and longed for when you're missing. You are worthy of affection, to be loved but also liked and sought after. You are worthy of affirmation, to be told this is the way. Though you stumble, you continue rising and walking, and you're doing it. Keep going. I'm with you. You are worthy of acceptance, to be taken into the fold and told over and over, you are welcome with us. You are worthy of satisfaction, to gaze high from peaks with sighs of relief and awe alike. You are worthy of significance, to walk this road with intention, impacting fellow wanderers with your footprints more than you could ever realize. You are worthy of security, to be sheltered both in body and spirit, wrapped in arms of love and remembrance, affirmed that you are okay, if only for just this day. Let us all believe it, if only for just this day.
Well, that was a rousing conversation today, wasn't it?
Not arousing.
No, just arousing.
Rousing.
Yeah,
yes.
Sorry. And so, hopefully it was not arousing.
I hope not. That would not have been of our intent.
No,
of this.
Exactly.
This is not a pornographic podcast.
No.
It's just a podcast about pornography.
Yeah.
It was tricky. It's tricky to talk about something without being like
graphic
and triggering. Like, it's something you have to dance around. And I think you can have a conversation like this with more depth and detail, probably on a one-on-one basis or with a small circle of friends in person. It's more difficult to do it on a wider scale like we're doing. But hopefully we said a lot of things that maybe you guys relate with and connect with, and I hope you'll comment too. I know it's a hard thing to talk about, but hopefully we can inspire you to be a little bold and share, and the blog, our blog, is a great place to do that. So if you go over to our blog, yourotherbrothers.com/podcast, find the episode 23 pornography post, and share some of your stories. Our questions, follow the questions that we talked about today. So what is pornography to you? Where do you draw the line between the creator's intent and our intent as a consumer? And yeah, just anything that's worked for you as far as combating pornography, replacing it with something better, what has worked for you, what's not worked for you. We'd love to hear your stories, your porn stories. Hashtag porn stories. Yeah, share some of your experience. We'd love to create an ongoing conversation. And just a reminder, we will take a look at the comments, and for our next Yobcast rehash video on YouTube, we will, Elliot and I will talk about some of your feedback from this episode. So if you enjoyed it, if you have something to say, we hope you'll say it. Just go over to our blog. And we also need to thank our sponsor before we go out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, electricity.
What a saver. Like, we literally started this podcast in the light and then it went dark, but then we had lights and lamps to mm-hmm. light the way and bring us back mm-hmm. into the light.
So, yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, yes, electricity has also led to the internet and to
horrible things.
Computer and technology and horrible things. But
and the on electric the flip side, chair.
But electric blankets.
Oh, see? Pros and cons.
From the electric chair to the electric blanket.
Electricity.
And pornography in between. Yeah. Thank you, electricity. And thank you, Marshall. It was so good having you from the great state of Maryland.
Thank you. Very always glad to be a part of the discussion.
Yeah, a cool part of our community is all the different perspectives we have. And so we could do a pornography podcast every week. We won't, but we could do it every week. And we'd have different things to talk about every time with different people. Yeah. So, yeah, we will revisit pornography time and again on many levels. Mm-hmm. But we're always here to continue that conversation. So thanks, you guys, for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And we will see you next time. So for all your other brothers, this is Tom.
This is Marshall.
And this is Elliot. And don't forget, you are not alone. Even the sparrow finds a home.
See you next time, everybody.
Goodbye.
Shalom.
Thanks for listening to Your Other Brothers podcast. Navigate more with us at yourotherbrothers.com and comment on our latest episode at yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Your Other Bros. If you'd like to support us financially, consider becoming a patron. Patrons pledge monthly and advance the storytelling efforts of Your Other Brothers. And in return, you gain access to a secret Facebook group, monthly calls with bloggers, fellow patrons, and more. Check out patreon.com/yourotherbros for more information. And finally, if you're new to the show or want to get in touch, shoot us an email at podcast@yourotherbrothers.com. Or you can write to us at Your Other Brothers, P.O. Box 843, Asheville, North Carolina, 28801. We're glad you're with us.